I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. It's official. Bernie Sanders, the Democratic Socialist Senator from Vermont, is running for president again after a strong showing in 2016, especially among left-leaning voters frustrated with the orthodoxy of the Democratic Party. Here he is on CBS this Sunday talking about how his ideas, things like Medicare for All, have become more popular.
One of the revolutions that I am very proud of, it's not just that many of the ideas that we brought forth in 2016 are now supported by a strong majority of the American people. It's that we are getting more people, ordinary people, young people, participating in the political process. And I think the future of the Democratic Party, frankly, is bringing young people, black and white and Latino and Native American and Asian American, into the political process. And I'm very proud, and we're going to build on this, that in the last campaign, you know, we lost. Got 46% of the pledged delegates, but we won more votes from young people than Clinton and Trump did combined.
Sanders' presidential run, the election of other Democratic socialists and progressive candidates have pulled the Democratic Party to the left. But it's a crowded field of presidential candidates who cover half the ideological spectrum from liberal to moderate. Does the future of the Democratic Party and the keys to the White House lie on the left or down the middle? And we have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Michael Nutter, former mayor of Philadelphia. He's an at-large member of the Democratic National Committee, wrote a book called Mayor, The Best Job in Politics. Mr. Mayor, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Always good to be with you, Marty.
Also with us is Will Bunch, and he's national opinion columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, and Philly.com. And Will, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Good to be back, Marty. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome, and good to have both of you here. Let me just make sure folks can join our conversation, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let's start with Bernie. Within 24 hours, Mr. Mayor, he raised almost $6 million from 220,000 people. These are small donors. That was in a one-day period. If money talks in politics, what does that say about Bernie Sanders and the Democratic Party?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think we know from the 2016 campaign and time leading up to it, Senator Sanders certainly has a very loyal and aggressive following. I think it's emblazoned in our minds. I think it was average donation $27.
$27.
Like that. Small donors.
Which has continued with this new $6 million.
I'll never forget that. His support is there. And, I mean, that's significant for him. Mm-hmm. I would assume the senator also realizes that there are a whole lot more people on the field these days.
Than 220,000 people.
Right. Than Hillary Clinton. We saw in 2016. And they bring a variety of skills and assets and followers, and many will be building from a small donor base as well. So, you know, I think 2020 is going to be very, very different than 2016.
Well, I should say to you, Will, you were a Bernie Sanders supporter in 2016. You wrote an interesting article just within the last week or so about Bernie Sanders saying essentially 2020 is not the year for you.
Yes, although the first part of the headline was that I think that he's the leader that we need now, in the sense that I think as a U.S. senator and as a leader of the progressive movement in this country, I mean, the thing is, he ran in 2016 to change the Democratic Party, basically, that people weren't talking about income inequality. People weren't talking about access to college. He felt we needed a more radical approach on health care. If that was his goal, he actually won, because now the Democratic Party, almost all the candidates who are running in 2020 reflect in some way the platform that he pushed for in 2016. So now the question is, mission accomplished, or is it not accomplished unless you actually elect the man who was behind those ideas?
Interesting question.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there are a couple issues. I mean, you call it ageism, if you will, but he would be the oldest first-term president in American history at 79 years old. But I think more importantly than that is there's been a lot of energy on the Democratic side since Donald Trump was elected. And so much of that energy has come from women. I mean, I've been covering this movement. You know, women were the backbone of the big midterm victory in the House for the Democrats. And, he doesn't quite reflect that. And I think he's a very divisive figure for a lot of the people who are really the most energetic people in the Democratic Party.
And
right
that
now.
Would be the women, you're
yeah.
saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let me go back to you, Mr. Mayor, and just how do you see the Democratic Party? And Bernie is a Democratic Socialist. I think you can define it the Venezuela kind if you're a critic, or perhaps the Norway kind if you're a much more supportive. But is Democratic Socialist, is that kind of a stand-in for liberal or progressive, or is it just this giant Rorschach?
No, I think that is a category in and of itself. So I am not a Democratic Socialist. I like to think that I'm certainly very progressive on a variety of issues. Fiscally, I think most would probably say I'm somewhat conservative. I at least recognize that most things are not free. Someone has to pay for them, and they cost money. And if you can figure that out, fantastic. But, just kind of throwing all of that out there that, we want this, we want that, we want the other thing, and somehow it's free, there's virtually nothing free. And so the issues have bubbled up. Certainly give credit to Senator Sanders and others for putting them at the forefront. I think to be a responsible candidate and when you're a candidate, you're hoping that you would win. So we know the difference between campaigning and governing. There's a big gap between those two things. And so what I always look for and what I listen for and watch for with folks is I listen to what they say. Mm-hmm. And then if they're successful, watch what they do. Mm-hmm. How are you going to pay for this? How are you going to govern? How do you get votes? So just kind of throwing it out there, as interesting and fascinating as that is, I'm much more interested in governing.
Well, let me go back to you, and I'm not trying to speak for anyone but myself, but what I have observed, and it looks as if in the last couple of decades, no matter who was president, it looks like the top 10% of this country got most of the goodies. Even if you just look at who has most of the money, obviously the wealthy have most of the money, and they got it through various means, I would say most of them legal. But nonetheless, it does feel as if the 90%, the other 90% are saying, now it's our turn. We want something.
Right. Well, this started in the 1980s in the era of Ronald Reagan. I mean, when he massively reduced the marginal income tax rate on the wealthy, which is one of the things we're talking about today, that created the situation where now CEOs of large companies felt they could pay themselves 350 times more than their average employee. It used to be – the number used to be closer to 50 back when we had a different taxation system in the country. So, really this comes down to who wields political power, right? Is it the large – do the politicians listen to the large donors who want to keep tax rates low? Because if they listen to a majority of the rank-and-file citizens, poll after poll has shown the majority of citizens want to raise taxes on the wealthy. They think, America prospered after World War II when the marginal tax rate on the wealthy was at one point briefly as high as 90%, and it was still 70% when Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980. So, and we have other ideas like Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax, which would even be even more aggressive. And, most Americans support that. We can't fix our roads. We can't give health care to people the way that other developed countries do. And this is a way to fix that.
Well, let me go back to you then, Mr. Mayor, which is just looking at some of whether it's living wage or if not free college, certainly college that's more affordable. The Green New Deal, it's a little vague, but nonetheless, it addresses the fact that there is climate change and it's happening
now.
Do you understand that appeal to the rabble?
I understand the appeal to everyone. Rich, not so rich. If you live in Florida, you can't deny that the water level is rising. Mm-hmm. You live in California, between the fires and drought, if you're further north, these photos we see of ice caps, melting. These are real. This is real stuff. So, your economics are almost secondary to issues of climate change. We're in Philadelphia. We're talking national politics and national news. But, you can't escape the fact that Philadelphia has the highest poverty rate of the 10 largest cities in the United States of America.
And it's been that way forever, it seems.
It's been over 20% for 40 years now. Right. So, it's no one person in particular. So my only point is there are serious issues and challenges here in the United States of America. When we decide we want to do something, we actually do something. The Fed is around the corner, but I mean, you know, it's not like you can walk in there and take the money out. So you make money, you pay taxes. We have a progressive system. Some people pay, some people avoid. Poor people are usually paying more than they should, and more well-to-do are paying less than they should. So, I mean, the system is, as a technical term, is jacked up. And so fixing it would allow us to actually do the things that we say we care about.
Well, so, Will, let me go back to you and just be specific then. If we're talking about the Democratic Party wanting to beat President Trump in 2020, what should their message be?
Well, first of all, number one, that they're not Donald Trump, because, you know, his instability and unfitness is the stuff of another show, another time. But we've all seen that. I do think we reached the point in this country, kind of riffing on what Michael was just saying, that, you know, that I think there's much more support for radical change in this country than there was, because people have seen decades of incremental approaches. At best, when we're not denying things like climate change, but even when we attack them, the approaches have been, you know, too bland. So I think people say, you know, if the system is, you know, America used to do great things. Again, Mayor Nutter alluded to that, you know, in terms of sending somebody to the moon or building Hoover Dam or
National Highway System.
I mean, when we
want to do stuff, we do it.
We did do that. But are we doing it now? I mean, I think that's the question. I mean, you know, taking on climate change is the equivalent of sending a man to the moon.
Mm-hmm. And is that going to win votes?
If you said that, yeah, mm-hmm. I think so, especially among young people. Look, you know, every 4 years, it's a funny thing, but the electorate gets younger and younger every 4 years. And, you know, Bernie Sanders was right in that clip that you played of talking about he did have enormous support from young people. You know, my children's generation overwhelmingly supported Bernie Sanders. And now there's another 4 years of young voters. And climate change is something they feel very strongly about. So is income inequality. And, you know, they want radical solutions. And at some point, these voters, they're already a big number, and they're going to be a majority someday.
We're almost having a break here. Can you be, Michael Nutter, a radical and a centrist? Can you be a radical centrist?
I think you can. I mean, I think that's just I'd call that just a responsible person who does want change, recognizes that things, again, cost something, and that, you know, the most recent tax change, which then took us, I think, now to $21 trillion in debt, you know, Republicans, that used to be their thing, was reducing debt. Now it doesn't matter. So, and then suddenly, you know, the same administration calls for cuts in various departments and agencies across the government because suddenly we can't pay for stuff, but we just gave away a whole bunch of money. I mean, you have to connect these dots and help people to understand what's really going on.
Well, let's take that very short break and we'll get back to our conversation. That familiar voice, former mayor of Philadelphia, Michael Nutter. He's an at-large member of the Democratic National Committee, the DNC. Will Bunch with us as well, national opinion columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, and Philly.com. We're talking about the Democratic Party should attack left, hold on to the middle. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We are alarmed by the new calls to adopt socialism in our country. America was founded on liberty and independence, and not government coercion, domination, and control. We are born free, and we will stay free. Tonight, we renew our resolve that America will never be a socialist country.
That, of course, was President Trump during his State of the Union address on February 5th. Well, let me go to you. Just the way the word wall has become a kind of a catchphrase that means different things, I think, to different people. Do you see socialists becoming that word as well?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's fascinating because I think it kind of depends on your age group. You know, I started covering politics way back in the 80s when just calling somebody a liberal was a dirty word. So socialist was like triple X rated, right? If you were nobody would even dare call themselves a socialist in the 1980s. And times have changed, you know. So now we've seen polls that show under age 30, maybe a majority of voters are willing to embrace some form of socialism, depending on how you define it. So,
people under 30, do they vote like they're
right?
Their
well, I was just gonna touch on that point in that it does as a buzzword, as a kind of a hot button thing. It does work for older voters, you know, people who watch the Fox News channel frequently. These people would be Donald Trump's political base, and it's important for him to keep them energized. The wall you mentioned, or mm-hmm. wall, I'm sorry, I guess we don't use the anymore, but the wall is something that keeps them energized. And but if that effect is wearing off, he's hoping that socialism will be the new thing to get his voters excited in 2020. And for those older voters, you know, I know a lot of voters in that age bracket, and it does get them worked up.
It does
work. Yeah.
I mean, do you see that, Mr. Mayor?
Yeah,
do you see that working?
I think, as Will said, I mean, it does, and you indicated as well. A, it means different things to different people. When I hear it, I mean, are we talking about, like, the Cold War? And yeah. Joe McCarthy? I mean, that's socialism. This is something very, very different. And I think, you know, I'd like to consider myself a little bit of a student of history. And so it's morphed into this other thing. And so now it will be the new almost, you know, slander to some extent to, you know, throw that around and then having any number of people say, oh, no, I'm not that. Immediately you're on the defense for things that are actually pretty good ideas.
Let me get David to join our conversation. He's calling us from Maple Glen, and he's speaking on to what we were just talking about. David, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
Sure.
I want to weigh in as a 69-year-old who's just about to file to collect my 70-year-old Social Security and say, you know, I find it so frustrating that there's two things you're not allowed to be taken seriously unless you say. One is I'm not a socialist, and the other is to question the absurdity of America's massive military spending. You can't do that and be taken seriously. And really, both those things are important. Let me just point out, Social Security is a socialist program. So is Medicaid. So is Medicare for All, which most Americans say they support in the polls, not when it's called socialist. But for people to say, as somebody on your show said, and I don't know who it was, I don't think things should be free. Mm-hmm. Everybody that's a socialist knows that it's not free. It's free to go to the doctor for you, but everybody knows it's paid by taxes, and they want that. That's what people want their taxes to go for, not wasteful military spending, not welfare for corporations and all of these things. But
David,
you know, people
yeah,
know,
David,
socialists know that.
Sure. Hold on one second. Let me ask you then, since we're talking about the Democratic Party and there are a bunch of people that want to be the nominee for the Democratic Party, who interests you? Who's your number one pick so far?
You know, I'm really torn because I think that, you know, I like all the things that Bernie's talking about, but he won't talk about the military budget, which I think is crucial. So I like Tulsi Gabbard because she's willing to stand up and say, why are we doing all this stuff? Why are we in Syria? Why are we sending arms to Ukraine? Why are we putting offensive weapons on the eastern border of Russia? It's all stupid, and it's not. We're not going to have a war with Russia either way. We spend 34% of all the military spending in the world. That can't last. So, you know, I support Gabbard for her military stance. I support Bernie for all his domestic ideas, which are terrific. But,
all right,
you know, you got to put both of them together.
Well, I don't know if that person exists yet. We have to, like Mr. Potato Head or something, put a person together. Will, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more with the basic premise. You know, I mean, it was funny watching this wall debate in Congress, and we're going to shut the government down over $6 billion on the wall, which The wall is a terrible xenophobic idea, but we waste billions of dollars on defense systems that we never debate at all, you know, and maybe we should be having that debate because it could it could free up so much money for some of these things that the average middle-class American could really use.
Sure, I mean, but then it becomes a political nightmare for that person. I mean, I agree. I mean, all the spending should certainly be questioned. And I don't know all the different systems we have and, you know, use this one, don't use that one. But there's nothing wrong with asking the question. The problem is, you know, that someone's going to either, depending on who you are, either come, you know, on your left or on your right, depending on what party you're on, and say you're weak on defense. And, you know, like the current occupant of the White House, you know, says, well, Democrats want free open borders and we want criminals to pour into the country. Well, of course, that's absurd. Right? I mean, he's so one or the other.
Yeah.
There's no gray with him.
Yeah.
You know.
Michael Noether, can I put you on the spot? Who interests you of the candidates running in the Democratic Party?
So I've not announced support for anyone, and I think it's for us is still a field that is evolving. Seemingly every other day, someone else jumps in the race, which I mean, ultimately is good for us, and it'll expand and then it'll shrink. You know, I'm certainly interested to see if you know, someone like Mike Bloomberg actually decides to run
whether, as a Democrat.
Yes. Well, he's already switched parties.
Okay.
He at least has done that. You know, still waiting to see what Vice President Biden does. You know, got John Hickenlooper, a couple. So, I mean, for me, you know, not even so much about whether I'm a party member or not, is I literally would like to see a full field. I think we may also find ourselves in a situation as Democrats that the potential for an outsider, a non-Washington person, someone who can actually say the things that need to be said in a different way than the current occupant of the White House might be an interesting moment for us. Because it's hard for a Democrat to make everybody happy.
Interesting. Because Democrats are just hard to please. Is that what you're saying?
We have a lot of thoughts.
We do.
We got a lot of things on our mind.
We do.
And there are some who are such purists that if you don't meet 100% of the test, you're not good enough. Well, there are certain things I think as a candidate you have to have the freedom to be able to say, and you can't make everyone happy. And the person who tries, usually, quite honestly, is not effective.
Well, that's interesting, Will, about a purity test. I've heard some people say, well, I don't like Kamala Harris because she was a prosecutor. I don't like Cory Booker because he likes school choice or he's too close to Wall Street. Is that a problem, you think, for Democrats?
I think historically it's been. I've written some of those columns about some of those people in the past, you know, and those kinds of objections. I do think, having watched the beginning stages of this race unfold, I think there's kind of a fascinating dynamic. And I just wrote a column this week, and it was largely about Kamala Harris, but it really applies, I think, to the broader field, which is you're seeing a really surprising amount of consensus. I've never seen this in my lifetime before. Real consensus, I think, among the Democrats about policy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are differences. I don't want to paper them over. But by and large, you know, most support expanding health care, most support greater college access, most support a higher minimum wage. There might be some difference on the details, but you don't have, you know, radically diametrically opposed candidates. And so I think what this consensus does is I think it frees up voters to look at the leadership qualities of the candidates.
That's that sort of ineffable or whatever that word is. I mean, that leadership quality is
charisma.
I think
you see a lot of excitement about two people in particular when it comes to that. One is Harris, and the other, who hasn't announced and may not run and maybe shouldn't run, but is Beto O'Rourke, is the other one, where people, it's not so much because if you look at their actual voting records, people who are very liberal are excited about them, and their voting, O'Rourke's voting record is very centrist. Harris, like you said, very traditional prosecutor, pro-death penalty, locked people up, et cetera. But I think people are saying, well, look, you know, the energy is coming from the grassroots. We in the grassroots have kind of defined where we want the party to go. And we think if we elect somebody who's not Donald Trump, who's president, they're going to listen to us. And maybe, 15 years ago, they were doing one thing. But as president in 2021, one, we think they'll be moving the country in the right direction. And I think that's the dynamic you're seeing right now.
When you talk about grassroots, is it a kind of Democratic Tea Party? I mean, the Democratic version of a Tea Party?
Well, I mean, there was a lot of talk about the resistance, quote unquote, when Trump was elected. In hindsight, maybe that was a little bit overstated, but you certainly saw more people out campaigning, going door to door. You saw people rallying against the travel ban or rallying to save Obamacare in 2017. That was a kind of grassroots energy you hadn't seen. I don't know if it's exactly equivalent to the Tea Party, but it was that type of thing. Yeah.
You have a look on your face.
Yeah. The other part of what Will was talking about where, I mean, many of the candidates conceptually agree on a bunch of issues. And so it does give you the opportunity to look a little further into whether it's record or we can talk about charisma or leadership or what have you done. Or again, the ability to govern, I think, is critically important.
Right.
And again, for some of us as Democrats, we, unfortunately, you kind of bang your head on the table, mm-hmm. go back to 2016, I don't like this one, or I don't trust that one, or I don't like this. Look, none of them, you're never going to have a beer with most of them.
Or any of them.
They're not moving next door to you. They're not going to be your friend. You're asking a person, are you qualified to do this job? And I would suggest at times people spend a little more effort sometimes figuring out who's going to fix their car, paint their house, or mow the lawn than we do about the qualifications of someone, local, state, federal, the most important job on the planet, whichever one you want to look at, that I'm just hiring you to do this work. You know, will you preserve or expand health care? Will you make sure that we are safe? Will my kid get a good education? I mean, there's some fundamentals about running for office, winning, and governing that is not about, you know, do I like you or are we going to hang out somewhere? The answer is no, you're not.
I do want to play two more clips, so let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Michael Nutter, former mayor of Philadelphia. He's an at-large member of the Democratic National Committee. Also with us, Will Bunch, national opinion columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, and Philly.com. And we are talking about the Democratic Party and what direction it should take, and talking about some of the people who have tossed their hats into the ring to be the nominee for the White House. Let me play two clips. The first one, it's a short one. This is Senator Elizabeth Warren. She's on CNBC. Actually, this is last July, talking about the fact that she is a capitalist.
I'm a capitalist. Come on. I believe in markets. What I don't believe in is theft. What I don't believe in is cheating.
And here's Senator Amy Klobuchar on a CNN town hall on Monday. She's being interviewed by Don Lemon, talking about free college tuition for all.
Do you support free college for all?
I am not for free four-year college for all. No. Thank you.
So let me ask you this, because
And I wish if I was a magic genie and could give that to everyone and we could afford it, I would. I'm just trying to find a mix of incentives and make sure kids that are in need, that's why I talked about expanding Pell Grants, can go to college and be able to afford it. Yeah. And then make sure that people that can afford it are able to pay.
So we'll take free college for all as a kind of bumper sticker and compare it to what Amy Klobuchar just said.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think, politically, it's always tough when you start with what you're not for, because that she did get applause. So maybe I'm wrong about that. But and she is for something. She does want more people to go to college. She wants to make it more affordable. And I think as the campaign goes on, maybe she'll refine that message a little bit, because you know the old saying, which there's some truth in, unfortunately, about how Democrats fall in love whereas Republicans fall in line, and I really do think there's something to that. And I think the Democrats are going to, whoever the Democrats nominate is going to be the person they fall in love with. So it's hard to fall in love with somebody who's saying no, right? Maybe there's creative ways to say yes. I just do want to say real quickly, I've been so impressed with the Elizabeth Warren's rollout of her campaign, in the sense that it's definitely the most, even more so than Bernie Sanders, it's definitely the most idea-oriented campaign of any of the Democrats. And, as an incumbent senator, she's putting her money where her mouth is, so to speak, in that she's writing the bills, she's introducing them, she's pushing for these ideas that are, pretty radical ideas. And I think she deserves a lot of credit for that.
Michael Nutter, do you think ideas matter in a campaign?
I think ideas really do matter. In campaigns, in many instances, I've come to think campaigns are certainly a window into the soul of how someone would govern should they be elected. I think that Senator Klobuchar, without getting into the that part of the debate, I just think it was refreshingly honest. She could have said something else and gotten an even bigger applause. Mm-hmm. I was actually kind of surprised at the applause.
Me too.
And so, I think honesty in all mm-hmm. of this does matter. I think ideas matter. And I think the ability to implement those ideas ultimately matters even more. Because, again, that's called governing. For Democrats, one of the final tests should be, so-and-so, great idea. You, that's fantastic. Can you win?
Mm-hmm. Can you what win? Can you beat Donald Trump?
Yes. Yes. Can you replace the current occupant of the White House? Which ultimately is the question that really matters in this whole thing. Right. So we've just got to be past, making a statement. We're raising the issues. I'm a Democrat. I want to win.
Mm-hmm.
Winnability to be factored into this conversation. Can you beat that person?
And we're framing the show maybe incorrectly. Can you win by going down the middle or do you win going left? Are you saying that doesn't really matter?
I think the first part is win by being honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I think
by being willing not to just always go for the applause line and that, we're going to give you everything you want.
Well, I think the reason people applauded Amy Klobuchar at that moment was for being honest, not for the idea. Right. And again, remember, they're trying to pick a candidate who's going to run against a president who's told, 7,000 documented lies since he became president. Candor and authenticity is something that voters are absolutely looking for.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at @WHYY Radio Times. In a sense, diagnosing the Democratic Party and what its future holds and who might it be its standard bearer. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, and I'm losing my voice, but I'm going to make it to the end of the hour talking with Will Bunch and former mayor of Philadelphia, Michael Nutter, about the Democratic Party. Let me read a bunch of comments here. An email from Shelley. Do FDR and LBJ pass today's socialist test? That's an interesting question. An email from Fred. The civil rights legislation, the clean air and other environmental laws that we have now were endorsed by left and right politicians, but since then the right has gained so much power that those laws could not pass today. Comment from Rick, I really believe that the media is the message. You might have a good vision, but if you can't convey it well, it doesn't matter. Let me go back to you, Will, because you wrote about the media, basically saying, don't make this about
Kirsten Gillibrand, whether she ate fried chicken with her fingers or with a knife and fork.
Right, and making this like the big story of the day.
Yeah, we've seen that, whether it's, Kamala Harris's choice in rap music while she was smoking pot or whatever, we've seen something of this sort, the things have been more serious, but I just think they're diversions. And I think voters don't really want that. I think there's something about political journalism, like we can't help ourselves from covering these stories. But, I would love to see, before it's too late, and it may be too late already, but if it's not too late, I would love to see some rethinking of the way that, high level mainstream journalists cover presidential campaigns.
Thinking about cable, the sort of endless coverage of Trump rallies, for instance, of 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, and that played a huge role in giving us Trump. The fact that he was such a ratings deliverer that they would show his airplane sitting on the tarmac when other actual live human candidates were speaking somewhere else, and they would show Trump's plane instead. Mm-hmm. So we can't have that again.
Your thoughts, Mr. Mayor?
No, I would agree, and 2020 will, I guess, kind of be our version of the Republicans' 2016, thinking about the 17 candidates up on the stage. I don't know if we'll have that many, but, you know, I mean, it sounds like we'll be up in the 10, 11, 12 neighborhood for a while, all serious, legitimate people, all, you know, in their own on their own, think they have a pathway going forward, and that'll probably be the field, you know, for a while. But how the candidates get covered, how much coverage, what's the substance of the coverage? We talked earlier. I mean, this really needs to be a substantive campaign about ideas, about focus, about commitment, and really as minimal as possible on the silly stuff.
A Facebook comment from Annabelle: the Democrats need to get their stuff together. If they can't thin the herd of candidates, we will be in a worse boat than in 2016. I mean, it seems to me that this is the process of thinning the herd, right? You win or lose.
You have to run.
voters will take care of that. I think they'll thin the herd for us. Yeah.
Let me ask you, Mr. Mayor, about Black women and the Democratic Party, because I think that the Democratic Party without Black women is really a shadow of itself.
We've seen election after election where Black women have literally pulled a candidate over the victory line. We know that African American women voted 94% for Hillary Clinton in 2016. There's no stronger, longer, deeper supporter than African American women, and you know it will be to our detriment if we don't continue that emphasis and focus on that particular constituency. But and having said that, and you know any number of other non-majority people and voters, we lost in 2016, and to a great extent, it was our own fault. Mm-hmm. There's no reason in the world that we should have lost Pennsylvania, so I'll start with that, to the current occupant of the White House. Tremendous voter turnout in Philadelphia, breaking any number of records. But, you know, I think to some extent there's been such a dependency on the extraordinary turnout in Philadelphia that no matter what else was going on in the rest of the state, we usually carried. And that just didn't happen. And so, you know, we have to talk to our own voters and remind people why we're Democrats, what we're about, what we're trying to accomplish, and be very intentional and very serious about it. That was our own fault.
Just to pick up on that, I mean, there were some Barack Obama supporters who voted for Trump. Are you saying don't try to win those people back? Just say, let's hold on to our base and just energize them to get them to the polls?
You know, often I talk about, you know, there are, you know, a couple, they're not written down, but there are a couple rules in this business. What I always say is the first rule of politics is define yourself before someone does it for you. The second is secure your base. We have some base securing that we need to do and some corralling. And then some folks did drift. I mean, I still don't completely understand how some folks voted two times for Barack Obama. And then their next vote is for the current occupant of the White House. I mean, I know sociologists and psychologists have, you know, are kind of figuring that thing out. So secure the base first. And then what did some of the 2008, 2012 Democratic voters, if they went, how do we maybe try to draw some of them back? But we have our own base to secure. Have we done that in 2016 and not using two negatives in a row? My English teacher would be really upset. But, I mean, we did not secure and tighten up the folks that we needed to first and foremost. And we were running around chasing maybe some other folks. And ultimately it was to our detriment.
Do you want to add to that, Will?
Yeah, I think Mayor Nutter's correct on that level. I think, I don't know, he mentioned there was a high turnout in Philadelphia, but I know that in Wisconsin, which was a state that Donald Trump won by the thinnest of margins, people went back afterwards and they found there was a drop in African-American turnout in Milwaukee, which was critical. Voters didn't have the enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton that they'd had for Obama, and that was a big factor. So was voter ID and hurdles that have been created by Republicans. That's a whole other story. But I'm glad you at the start of this segment, you brought up African-American women, and I think that's a fascinating dynamic. And I do think they were the ones who gave Barack Obama the Democratic nomination in 2008. They were the ones who gave Hillary Clinton the nomination in 2016, and I think they could absolutely play the same role in 2020. I think it's interesting because their early polls, African-American voters tend to be very pragmatic, much more so than white progressive voters, I think. They want to know who can deliver for them. They really place a high value on experience, which is why the early polls show Joe Biden doing very well among black voters, even though there are several African-American candidates, but you see Joe Biden doing very well for those reasons. But what was interesting in 2008 was Hillary Clinton had huge support in the black community at the start of 2008. And then when Obama
won. Running against Obama.
Running against Obama. But when Obama won in Iowa, all of a sudden people said, oh my gosh, we've always wanted an African-American president. Here's the guy. What are we doing? We're supporting a white candidate. Are we not? So you had this huge shift, especially in South Carolina, which is such a key state, to Obama. And I think the same thing could happen here. I think if Kamala Harris or maybe Cory Booker, but I think Harris even more so, has a strong showing in one of those first couple of primaries, I think you'll see a surge to a candidate like that.
The one other thing about when we talk about the one other segment and – I don't know exactly what happened in Milwaukee. And, let's be honest, two really great people. But, Hillary Clinton, who I love, is not Barack Obama.
Yeah.
A very different, right? But I've yet to fully understand 54% of educated white women voted for the current occupant of the White House.
Yeah.
Right? This was not a black problem. Black folks know where they needed to be. Turnout, but whoever showed up, they knew who they were for, right?
Yeah.
I do not understand that. And so if the party wants change, then a bunch of our folks need to come home and vote for a Democrat.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the Republican...
Really fast, because I want to get Tony on. No, yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead, Will.
No, I just say a lot of the kind of underground, subterranean, illicit Republican efforts, though, were aimed at discouraging young voters and black voters from turning out, and Trump famously thanked blacks who didn't vote at a rally after his election. So.
Sure.
Let me get Tony. Tony calling us from Philadelphia. Hi, Tony. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, hi. Good morning.
Hi there. Morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Let me first say that I have been enjoying Mr. Nutter's euphemism, current occupant of the White House. I enjoy that very much.
It's good at that.
Let me go on to say that I'm sort of getting the sense that the Democratic voice next year really, it's going to be critical for them to kind of address the ideological disparities between town and country, country being a lot of of Trump's base, and I think that it really needs to kind of be addressed. This whole arrogance, this idea that folks who live in the cities are arrogant, they don't care about what happens in the country, and I think that was really sort of a big piece of the tilt that split him into the White House in the first place. And I just wondered if you agree with that, sort of in the macro sense, kind of addressing the importance of stressing and finding foundational cooperation between social sectors, like farming communities and cities.
No, Tony, I think it's a really good point, and it reminds me, I did an interview last fall with Ben Bradley Jr., who did a really interesting book about Luzerne County in Pennsylvania, and spending a lot of time, people in that county, they voted for Trump in Pennsylvania, but spending a lot of time with them, and will they think the media is a bunch of elite, snotty people that don't care about them?
Yes.
And other things?
It's funny, because I was going to make the same point, is, I've been to Trump rallies and I've talked to people at the rallies, and nothing motivates these voters more than what you said, than their hatred of the media. They don't chant "We want jobs," they chant "CNN sucks," at these rallies. And I think your caller hinted at something that's so important, which is that we've been talking about economics for better in one way or another most this hour.
Yeah.
But the thing that drives so many voters is culture, that the fact that so many people, like you said, in rural areas or in the Rust Belt, these cities, that smaller cities that have lost their factories, the cultural resentment of people they view as liberals, whether it's journalists or Hollywood or college professors or the whole scientists, climate scientists, you can run down this whole list. I think the resentment of those people is really outweighs their love of any Republican politician, to be honest.
But what then, of course, is fascinating is, as a candidate, the now current occupant of the White House, convinced poorer Americans working class or blue collar, again, I don't like a lot of these labels, but I mean, convinced a bunch of folks that he was their guy. When he has bankrupted other companies, not paid bills, has, you know, apparently some undocumented people actually working for him, is hurting farmers. I mean, you know, quote unquote, all these components of the base now in office governing is hurting the folks who he had convinced he would be for. I mean, this whole thing is built on a series and a stack of failures and lies. You know, again, I'm just wondering, like, when will the light bulb go off? When will
Though, picking up on Tony's question, is that an opportunity then for the Democratic Party, which is, and he's saying, look, there are rural people and urban people who probably have more in common than they might believe.
And I want to go back to one thing. I mean, I think all the dozen or so people running, I think I'm not the current occupant of the White House, I'm not that guy, that's not enough. Because, again, that goes back to something you said earlier about what you're not for. Okay, fine. We'll figure that out. What are you for? And what are you going to do? And how are you going to change my life circumstance? That's what people want to hear. I'm not him.
Living wage, affordable health care, affordable college.
Sure.
All of
but
those.
Also being able to talk to folks who are in rural areas. That, I mean, like, where do you think food comes from? And a bunch of the things that are, you know, out in those communities. And when I used to have my other job, you know, helping people understand that being connected to the farmers in Lancaster is really important to deal with food insecurity here in Philadelphia. You know, it doesn't just magically show up in the store. Right. Somebody has to make it or grow it.
But you have to understand that, you know, when you're asking, when you're talking about Democrats needing to reach those people, how are they going to do that? Because those people, their time is monopolized by two things, the Fox News channel. And when they're getting in the car, they're listening to Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or these radio hosts.
Didn't I listen to Marty Moskowitz?
Some of them, yes, some we do. We do. Some of them do. Our farmers, our South Jersey farmers are listening to Marty, but in other parts of the country, they don't have what we have here in Philadelphia. Yeah. So they're listening to those folks, and there's just no, you know, their business model is premised on stirring up that resentment against liberals, and
is it 2016 all over again?
We're always going to be in 2016 to some extent, you know.
We're going to be litigating and relitigating that one for a while. In the meantime, also getting, in some instances, and I'm not complaining, you know, various government subsidies. Again, that's that government in your life, right? In a rural agriculture circumstance. I remind people, again, in Philadelphia from time to time, number one industry in Pennsylvania, agriculture.
Right.
And it's not all this, you know, bright lights, big city, sophistication. Number one industry in our Commonwealth is agriculture, and we need to address that.
I'm giving you the last 15 seconds, Will. Final thoughts.
I'm trying to figure out how they're going to get these 20 people on a debate stage and how people are going to differentiate. You know, all I can tell you is whatever you think about the state of the Democratic race now is probably not what you're going to be thinking a year from now. You know, so.
Well, we're going to leave it there.
This party's healthy.
Yeah. Will Bunch, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Marty.
You're welcome. And he's a national opinion columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, and Philly.com. And Mr. Mayor, thanks for coming in as well.
Thank you, Marty.
And that's Michael Nutter, former mayor of Philadelphia. He's an at-large member of the Democratic National Committee, the DNC. Wrote a book called Mayor, The Best Job in Politics. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.